House Committee on Energy and the Environment, Friday, April 6, 2007, 1 p.m. in Hearing Room C. Chair, Representative Jackie Dienfelder.
Environment Committee to order.
Yeah, okay. Thank you for being here, and we have a pretty full agenda today. I'm actually going to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 103, 105, and 106 simultaneously because DEQ is here to talk on all three. Yes. So let me, I will open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 103, 105A, and 106A. And Kat will give a brief overview, and then the Department of Environment handing the...
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 103A increases the annual fee the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality assesses to generators of hazardous waste. Senate Bill 105A increases Department of Environmental Quality fees assessed on cargo, passenger, and dredging vessels and onshore and offshore facilities to support programs related to oil spills. Senate Bill 105A declares an emergency and is effective on passage. And finally, Senate Bill 106A increases the DEQ filing fee from $50 to $75 for requesting certification of heating oil decommissioning and increases the filing fee from $125 to $200 for requesting certification of heating oil tank corrective action. That also declares an emergency effective on passage.
Okay, thank you. And thank you for being here. And for the record, please state your name.
Chair Dienfelder, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Alan Kippett. I'm the administrator of the Land Quality Division at DEQ, and I'm here to testify in favor of Senate Bills 103, 105A, and 106A. 103 relates to our hazardous waste compliance program. This is a program that for over 20 years we've had delegated from EPA. We have a good relationship with the stakeholders in this program. There are over 520 facilities in the state of Oregon that we inspect and offer technical assistance to in this program, and this bill would offer a slight fee increase to those hazardous waste generators to help support the inspection part of the program. I'd be happy to answer any questions you have on this particular bill.
Yes, this is on 103 specifically?
Correct.
Okay, and did you hand this out to all?
I did. I should say I have some written testimony and fact sheets on each of the bills that I've handed out.
Why don't you go through all the bills, and then I think we'll have the same. We'll have people come up and testify on all three bills as well.
Okay. All right. Senate Bill 105A is for the Marine Spill Contingency Planning Program that we have at DEQ. It's a program that was started in 1991. At that time, we had four staff people working on this program as sort of a startup core staff. Since that time, we've been able to reduce the program to three FTE, but we haven't had a fee increase in this program since 2001, and this fee increase would pay for the three staff necessary to support the program. I believe you have a letter, or there is a letter that's been sent by Rob Douglas and the stakeholders in support of the fee increase in this program. This is really for contingency planning efforts for vessels that enter the waters of the state.
And just for the record, Rob Douglas is representing the Columbia River Steamship Operators, and hopefully everybody has a letter. This is a letter of support.
Correct. Senate Bill 106A is basically a consumer protection bill for residences that have heating oil tanks. We've had this program in place for several years, since 1999. It's designed, the department's role is a little different in this program than in some others. We certify contractors to remove heating oil tanks from residences when that's so desired, and also to conduct cleanups on the property if that's necessary. And what we found in the last couple of years is that we've had some firms that have been doing fraudulent work, which ends up costing the homeowners money because they have to get the work redone. This is a small program, currently has four FTE. The fee increases we're asking for would add one FTE to this program. And I should point out maybe that we get about 2,500 certifications that we deal with every year for heating oil tank removals and or cleanup.
Okay. Thank you. And I think at this point what I'm going to do is see if there's any questions for you, Al. You're the only person signed up to testify on Senate Bill 103. So wanted to see if there were any questions from the panel, or from the dais up here on Senate Bill 103. And then what I'll do is I'll end up closing the other public hearings.
Okay.
Any questions on...
You confused me. Are we asking questions on all three of the...
Actually, you can ask all three. And then there's nobody else testifying in 103, so I'll have to close that public hearing and then bring other people up for the others.
Yes, question.
Question from Representative Burley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In Senate Bill 105A, it grows, page 3, line 25, the words "and liquefied natural gas" were added to the definition of oils or oil. And that was done by amendment in the Senate committee. And I'd like to know more of the rationale for that and also what the implications are, because I would suspect, as the bill summary says, it modifies the definition of oil for purposes of environmental quality statutes, plural. So even though we're modifying the definition in one place, the applicability of that new definition is probably rather widespread throughout the statute. So could you elaborate on that, please?
Representative Burley, members of the commission, there are multiple statutes within the contingency planning arena. We specifically have restricted the modification or of the definition of oil to pertain to contingency planning. So you're right, we do actually have other definitions of oil in other parts of our environmental cleanup statutes, for example, that is not impacted by this definition. The sole purpose here was to make sure that if for the potential of large liquid liquefied natural gas ships coming into the waters of the state, that there was some control over the emergency planning, contingency planning, that those vessels and facilities needed to be included in, because they haven't been so far. Now, there are no facilities currently in existence or ships coming into Oregon to do that, but it was sort of a proactive attempt to capture that universe. But it only applies to the contingency planning definition of oil.
Follow up. And I don't know if is Mr. Bowers signed up to testify?
He is for 105, so I'll call him up.
You guys bring him up now?
I guess we could. He's the only person we have to testify, and since there's a public hearing open on all three, why don't you go ahead and come up?
And I'll withhold my question.
Okay. And this is specific to Senate Bill 105.
Correct, Madam Chair.
Welcome, Gary.
Thank you, Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee. I'm Gary Bauer, representing Northwest Natural. And I'm appearing today to request a clarifying amendment to the section that Representative Burley just spoke to. Northwest Natural operates two facilities in Oregon, which are basically, we take natural gas off of our pipeline systems, convert it to liquefied natural gas for storage purposes, and then when it's needed, particularly during winter peaking season, we convert it back into a gaseous stage and put it back into our system. They are subject to the Oregon Public Utility Commission's safety regulations, as well as the Federal Office of Pipeline Safety. And we do have contingency plans, safety plans, construction efforts, monitoring, fire, all of those things in place. So our understanding was not the intent of DEQ to extend this statute to those facilities, and what we're hoping for is a slight modification to the definition that would just clarify that. Thank you.
Does the department have any response?
The department has no problem with the amendment. We've worked with Gary over the last couple of days to, and basically would tack on to liquefied natural gas on line 25 on page 3 to further clarify that that's related to vessels entering waters of the states and facilities receiving that from those vessels. So it will be a clear definition of what we're trying to capture with liquefied natural gas.
So my understanding, that was an unintended consequence of the amendment that was made over in the Senate. Is that correct? I mean, with that addition?
Correct. I think it was just stating liquefied natural gas made with the existing facilities that Northwest Natural Gas has, which we did not intend to include in this bill. That was an unintended consequence.
And, Gary, was that discussed over in the Senate, or was that something that you...
Chair Dingfelder, I did not realize what happened until I read the engrossed version after it passed the Senate.
Okay. Thank you. Follow up, and then Representative Jensen has
a
question.
Yeah. For both of you, if you foresee any potential issues arising from putting liquefied natural gas in the same definition as oil, because they're not, I mean, liquefied natural gas technically is not a petroleum product. They have different physical characteristics. So I'm just, you know, playing the devil's advocate here. Is there any potential problems down the road doing that?
Representative Burley, members of the committee, I don't think so. That's why we really tried to be clear on limiting it to the contingency planning effort, because the types of vessels that will be coming into the waters of the state and delivering this to facilities on shore is a real unique circumstance, and the spill planning effort is really the best way to capture any potential problems from those vessels. So by limiting liquefied natural gas to this particular aspect of our rules or statutes, we think there's not going to be any confusion.
Representative Jackson, any question?
I think I have answered my questions, Madam Chair. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any other, well, first of all, other questions from the dais here? Okay. And is there anybody else in the audience that would like to come up?
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Gary, for coming up on that. We don't have anybody else signed up for any of these bills for testimony. So without any questions, I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 103, 105, and 106. And open up a work session. Okay, I will open up the work session on Senate Bill 103.
Madam Chair.
Representative Cannon.
I move Senate Bill 103 to the floor with pass recommendation.
Representative Cannon moves Senate Bill 103 to the floor with the pass recommendation. Is there any questions or discussion? Okay, seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Smith?
Absent.
Representative Byer?
Aye.
Representative Vincent?
Aye.
Representative Berman?
Aye.
Representative Cannon?
Aye.
Representative McPherson?
Aye.
Chair Dingfeld?
Aye. Can we do a consent, or does anybody want to carry this to the floor?
I move that it be.
Greg will carry it.
Do we have them carry all these?
I haven't carried all of them.
Actually, I'm going to make a motion that we put it on the consent.
Okay, motion has been provided by Representative Cannon.
I think we have a carryover.
How about Representative Cannon? Would you like to carry? You haven't carried many bills from this committee yet. And being a freshman.
That or the person who objected.
Yeah. Well, we have another bill coming up, so there'll be another opportunity. So. Okay, so with that, the motion carries. I can't remember if I babbled that in, and Representative Cannon will carry that to the floor. Mm-hmm. Okay, I will open up and close the work session on Senate Bill 103, and I will open up a work session on Senate Bill 106. Okay.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 106 to the floor with pass recommendation.
Okay, Representative Cannon moves Senate Bill 106A, the due pass recommendation, to the floor. It has made a motion to move Senate Bill 106A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any questions or discussion? Okay. Clerk will call the roll, please.
Representative Smith, absent. Representative Byer?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Representative Burley?
Yes.
Representative Cannon?
Aye.
Representative McPherson?
Aye.
Chair Dingfeld?
Aye. And Senator Burley, I just promoted you. Would you like to carry this to the floor?
I would be happy to carry it.
That's what co-chairs are for. Thank you. So with that, the motion carries, and Representative Burley will carry Senate Bill 106A to the floor. That I will close the work session on Senate Bill 106. And we will not have a work session on Senate Bill 105 because we need to wait for the amendment to come back. So hopefully we'll be able to do that next week. Okay? Thank you. And next I will open up a public hearing on House Bill 3469. Kat, can you give us a brief overview, please? We're sending Kat home because she's got the cat go crud.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3469 authorizes the Department of Human Services to grant variances from certain water treatment techniques required under the Federal Safe Drinking Water Act when treatment is unnecessary for protecting public health.
Okay, well, let's get started even without her. We have lots of people that would like to come up and testify, but
should be those.
Okay, first we will call up, I'll call up these folks together, so if you could come up to the witness stand together, although I don't see Phil Shibley. We have somebody else from the Department of Health, so maybe I'll come up. David Schaff, who's the administrator for my city's Water Bureau, and Ed Campbell, who's also with the Portland Water Bureau. And then, David, since Gail isn't here, would you like to come up from the Department of Human Services Drinking Water Program? And for the record, if you could just state your name, please, and your affiliation for the folks who are listening.
Chair Dinkfelder and members of the committee, my name is David Schaff. I'm the administrator of the Portland Water Bureau. With me today is Edward Campbell, the Water Bureau's Resource Protection and Planning Director, and I am here to speak today on House Bill 3469. Okay,
yep.
Thank you.
Jump right in.
Thank you. I am testifying today to express the City of Portland's support for HB 3469. If it passes, the bill would grant the State Drinking Water Program full authority under federal law to issue variances to federal drinking water rules. I'll give you a little bit of background here. The Federal Safe Drinking Water Act provides the states with the authority to issue two kinds of variances to federal drinking water rules issued by the Environmental Protection Agency. The first kind of variance we in the industry refer to as a dirty water variance. It's a term of art in our industry. And it's intended in situations where state determines that the water provider or a water provider is unable to meet federal drinking water standards due to characteristics of their drinking water source. These variances can be granted or issued temporarily by states if and only if several conditions are met regarding regular notification by the water provider to their customers that the drinking water does not meet federal drinking water standards and a state-approved schedule for the water provider to come into compliance with those standards. The second type of variance is one that we refer to as the clean water variance, and that's intended for situations in which the state determines that a water provider's source does not require a federal drinking water treatment method because of the high quality of that provider's source, which ensures that human health is fully protected. Just as with that first type of variance, the dirty water variance, the so-called clean water variance may only be issued as long as several conditions are met, including the opportunity for a public hearing, notification of the EPA administrator, and compliance with any, federal conditions for issuance of the variance. The current Oregon revised statutes do not provide the state the authority to grant the second type of variance provided. It only provides the ability to grant a dirty water variance. 3469 adds standard language derived from the Safe Drinking Water Act to the Oregon revised statutes, which would provide the state with the ability to grant the second type of drinking water variance as well. Now, we have an issue or an interest in this. We are concerned with the implementation of the new federal rule, and I'm going to read it out loud, the Long-Term 2 Enhanced Surface Water Treatment Rule. We all refer to that as LT2. LT2 would require the City of Portland to build costly additional treatment for its Bull Run drinking water source and either cover or provide additional treatment at the outlets of our open finished drinking water reservoirs. We are challenging this rule in federal court because we believe the rule unfairly penalizes systems such as Portland that have exceptionally clean drinking water sources and are allowed by the EPA to remain unfiltered. Other Oregon communities such as us are Bend, Baker City, and Reedsport. If we do not succeed in our challenge, we may choose to seek a variance from LT2 in accordance with the Safe Drinking Water Act. Unless the statutory change is made, however, neither Portland or any other Oregon community will be able to apply for a variance from the state of Oregon. If it is passed, the state drinking water program would be able to consider requests for variances after the state takes primacy for enforcing the rule from the EPA. And it's customary for a state to enforce drinking water rules issued by the federal government. The state drinking water program has indicated that it could seek primacy for the rule as early as 2009. We believe it's in the best interest of Portland metropolitan water customers and all of Oregon to amend the state law so that the variance option is available and if and when the state takes primacy under a federal LT2 rule. Additionally, we believe it's important to have the various option for Oregon communities should the EPA issue additional future treatment requirements that may not be necessary for all water systems. Thank you, and we'd be glad to answer any questions you may have.
Why don't you go ahead, Ed, and then we'll see if there's any questions. Do you want to add anything?
No, I don't have any additional comments.
Mm-hmm. Okay, any questions for the City of Portland? Representative Burley?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm always asking questions.
Okay, questions are a good thing.
The question I had, and I want to thank you again for coming by my office earlier. I think you did a great job, you know, explaining it to me at that point. And I just want to repeat the question I asked earlier today so that maybe somebody in the room knows, and that is why, when this was put in statute the first time, do we not include both of these options for the variances? Why did we just include one and not the other?
We have somebody from the Department of Health that might be able to, and for the record, and by the way, your boss is sitting behind you, just so you know.
Thank you. Jerry. Appreciate it. I felt some presence from behind me. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Dave Leland. I'm the manager of the drinking water program, and gosh, I wish I could tell you. I don't know. In fact, I was here sort of back then, so I don't recall any specific discussions over that in amendments to statute that were done when we took primacy, and that was in the 1985 session. I suspect that since this is just an authority, it probably didn't surface in looking at our statute to see if it was no less stringent than the federal statute. And so I think the concentration at that time was to go through the state drinking water statute and make sure there wasn't something in there that was less stringent than the federal statute, because that's sort of the test that we have to meet in order to maintain primacy for the safe drinking water regulations from EPA. So does that answer your question?
Yeah, well, Senator Brown. No offense, no, it doesn't, but then I'm not sure that there is an answer, but really what I'm looking for is, are there some outstanding issues that were raised at that point that, you know, we still need to deal with? So, I mean, if nobody really knows why, then I'm guessing there's really no answer to my question. That's fine. If I may, Madam Chair, just one other question. I'm a little bit interested in the paper that you left me today where you talk about it says, if and when the state takes primacy for enforcing the rule from the federal EPA, DHS has indicated that it will seek primacy for the rule as early as 2009. How does that work? I mean, you already have primacy for implementing the state or the Safe Drinking Water Act in Oregon, so how does that work when you get a new rule like this? I'm just curious.
But I have the same question, so...
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Burley, there's really kind of two flavors of primacy, and the first is when the state originally applies for primacy, where EPA looks at all of the statutes and authorities and, you know, make sure the whole overall package is no less stringent. And then, of course, as time goes on, new rules are adopted by EPA. So each time a new rule is adopted, the state, in effect, reapplies for primacy, but just for that one rule. So what EPA will look for from us when the time comes is they'll want to see our rule. They'll want to see a demonstration that each provision of the state rule is no less stringent than the federal rule. And any other conditions that might be established in the federal rule adoption. So each time, the short answer is each time a new federal rule is adopted, each state with primacy has to reapply
for that particular
rule.
Okay. Representative Cannon, and then we'll see if there's other questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When the state does take primacy, does its rules for variance have to be in compliance with the EPA, the federal EPA standards? So the state has to get primacy, the state has to have basically the same standards that the federal government had. Does its variance requirements have to be similarly synchronized?
Madam Chair, Representative Cannon, the test, again, is no less stringent. They don't have to be the same, but they have to be no less stringent. And I'll just tell you, take the opportunity to tell you at this moment that we did take this language. We ran it by both the Department of Justice and also by the Office of Regional Counsel up at EPA in Seattle. And there doesn't seem to be any particular problem with language. So does that answer your
Thank
question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I may follow up. Just, well, that was going to be my follow-up question, mm-hmm. to make sure that you had done that. And I appreciate that answer. I'll leave it at that. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Representative Jensen has a question, and I have a couple of questions.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. The department, what kind of, if any, additional workload are you looking at in the department for this particular activity, or is this a pro bono that you're doing to support me?
Madam Chair and Representative Jensen, thank you for asking that question, first of all. In looking at this, we don't see any substantial financial impact on the department. The variance provision feel would be just extremely rarely exercised, and so we don't see an ongoing workload from this.
So you're not going to come back and ask us for a half an FTE?
For doing these variances? No, Representative Jensen.
And Representative Jensen, if we do, we'll ask the City of Portland to pay for it, I think is what we'll do.
Well, I was going to suggest, if that was going to be the case, we put the fee in place. That
we already pay plenty, so.
So, Madam Chair, did you just commit Portland to pay for it when Ben comes in?
I'm going to get you guys in trouble. Okay. Follow-up question? Or? I actually have another question for the city, and then we'll, if Gail would like to come up to the dais afterwards, because I know she's whispering in the ear of her employee. question I had, I know there was a task force or a work group that looked at this issue, is that correct, for the City of Portland, at filtration, and what additional mechanisms would have to be in place to meet the EPA rule, is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. What was the cost estimate in order to comply that was determined for the City of Portland?
Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, there are different types of treatment methodology that could be used. So I will give you a range, and they range from a low of approximately $135 million to a high of $275 million on the capital side. That does not take into account the annual O&M costs, operation and maintenance costs of new treatment facilities. And that would be to cover both the treatment of the source water under the LTT rule and the covering of our in-town open finished drinking water reservoirs, which we have five of.
Okay. Thank you, gentlemen. Any other questions for the city before I have the department? Gail Shively, come up. Okay. Stick around. We might have some other questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
And why don't you come up and join? You guys can both stay up there if you'd like. Yeah, saved us. Thank you. Sorry, we got through our other bills pretty quickly.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Gail Shibley, Administrator of Environmental Public Health for DHS's Public Health Division, and I apologize for my bit late arrival. Nothing like I-5 three-lane parking lot for a while to kind of let you think about good things like drinking water.
And the Tulip Festival.
That's where everybody is going. Okay. you have the written testimony there. Very honestly, Mr. Leland has done a terrific job in providing information apropos your questions. I do want to add, you may recall from my faulty would have been PowerPoint presentation up in, I think it was at 347 way back in January, I think. One of those points that I was attempting to make was that we have recognized that we have no capacity to deal with these new rules. And so when you're talking about these the new rules and why haven't we accepted primacy, we have about 2 years to take that on. We have no capacity to do that. And so that was part of the information that I was attempting anyway to try to provide you, because it is a complex issue. As Mr. Leland mentioned, we have already, and as is noted in the testimony, we have consulted with both our Attorney General and with EPA Regional Council. It does not, this language as adopted, although it's not any sort of official legal opinion, they do not see any problem with any jeopardy to the Department's Primacy Program agreement with EPA. That was certainly a concern we had, and yes, of course, we would do our due diligence. I appreciate the checking in on. They, of course, as always, reserve the right to conduct a primacy program review if and when final language is enacted into Oregon revised statute. So I'm happy to have Dave answer any other questions you have.
Other questions? Representative Burley? Just a hunch. You had a question.
Yeah, well, it's actually probably more of a comment. I appreciate, Gail, the point in your testimony.
Regional Council. It does not, this language as adopted, although it's not any sort of official legal opinion, they do not see any problem with any jeopardy to the Department's Primacy Program agreement with EPA. That was certainly a concern we had, and yes, of course, we would do our due diligence. I appreciate the checking in on. They, of course, as always, reserve the right to conduct a primacy program review if and when final language is enacted into Oregon revised statute. So I'm happy to have Dave answer any other questions you have.
Other questions? Representative Burley? Just a hunch that you had a question.
Yeah, well, it's actually probably more of a comment. I appreciate, Gail, the point in your testimony here about DOJ and EPA both saying it won't jeopardize the agreement. I'd be a little bit more concerned about the city challenging their rule in federal court, whether or not that's kind of poking them in the eye with a sharp stick, but we'll worry about that later. Anyways, thank you.
No problem.
All right. The question I had, Gail, okay, so you don't have primacy for this program yet, but you're looking at applying, and you're saying if you have the resources. So this does not, I mean, we can't tell the feds, you can't look at the variance is only if the state assumes the program, is that correct? That's what I'm trying to figure out.
Madam Chair, the variance language isn't associated with any particular rule. It's in the statute, okay. So it really applies across the board, just like the other language in our statute does. So, I also want to echo what Gail said earlier. The issue of adopting the new federal rules is a huge issue for us and for water suppliers.
But EPA will look at this. They will look at this as in statute, and sort of run it around and said this won't jeopardize your ability to do that once you decide you have the resources to do that, you think.
That's correct. In fact, if I could, Madam Chair, if this variance were already in state statute, if I understand this correctly, Portland would be asking for a variance from the LT2 rule under that.
That's
potentially.
That's his question.
Madam Chair and Representative Burley, the fact that we have not adopted that particular federal rule, you know, we don't have anything to grant a variance from, so they would, in our absence, I presume the city would have to be dealing with EPA direct on that.
Okay, that's what I was trying to get at. Now they have to deal with EPA until you get the ability.
That's correct.
Or primacy from EPA to grant it to the state. So this is where I think Representative Jensen's question was coming in. Can the city, who makes the decision about whether or not you're going to go for primacy? Is that the state's decision about whether you have the resources or not to adopt that program?
Madam Chair, ultimately, yes, absolutely. We have, as I indicated earlier, about two-year window, all the states do. And at this point, with the scarce resources, this is one of the tiers of needs that we've identified with you and that we are in process during this legislative session to attempt to address. It was in the governor's recommended budget. It is in the co-chair's budget. And as you know, that 2187 passed on the floor of the House. So we are making every effort to make sure that we have the resources to make that adoption. But ultimately, that will be our decision.
Representative Jensen, I think, has a question.
I heard a nasty word come up in the process that you're talking about. That was the AG sort of thing. What type of bill do you expect to get in relationship to their billable hours, which comes out as other funds rather than so?
Madam Chair, Representative Jensen, I wasn't sure if you were speaking AG. You don't like agriculture, but I'm sure that's not the case. You and I are both equal fans in that. Our Assistant Attorney General, we are charged on an hourly rate, and it used to be $95 an hour, which is very cheap. But I think it's like $110. Don't quote me on that, but somewhere just north of $100 and something. An hour.
I expect it's what the legislature comes out with, because you probably won't, you know, on this. But how many hours do you expect this is going to take? I'm trying to figure out how much of a fee we want to put on this.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Jensen, we anticipate it's going to take about 6 months of solid work. Daily.
They want to rethink whether they want to do it at the EPA.
As a Portland Water Bureau ratepayer, I'm not sure I like that. I like my own answer on that. But in all seriousness, Madam Chair, Representative Jensen, I appreciate the concern and the understanding that, you know, all the dominoes are related to each other. We have no way of anticipating in any sort of kind of sharp penciled sort of way. Clearly, this is an important issue. It deserves and will receive, if and when it or any other water system requests a variance under this language, will receive very thorough, diligent, due assessment and consideration.
And if I can editorialize a minute, with that, I appreciate your answer, to that. But I think sometimes when we think about fiscal costs, we do let those areas, which, of course, you will have some line item budget amount that is spectacular for attorney general fees, but it's still something we need to, I think, bear in mind as we do these things.
Thank you.
And I certainly would not expect either you or the attorney general's office to do a quick brush over sort of thing with.
Any other questions for the department? Okay, thank you. Next, I'd like to call up, list here, Kent Crawford and Regna Merritt. And it doesn't mean you're necessarily together. It's just to move things along a little bit, so we can all let you get back out and get on I-5 and sit in traffic again.
At least we'll have the sunroof open.
Yeah.
Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, my name is Kent Crawford. I am the director of the Portland Water Users Coalition. We're a group of large industrial and commercial water and sewer customers in the city of Portland that advocates for affordable city utility rates. Our group was actually created in 2002 specifically to oppose expensive and unnecessary treatment of the city's Bull Run drinking water. We're here to urge your support for House Bill 3469. It is true that this is a relatively small housekeeping measure, but it's one that we can't afford to ignore. This bill could mean the difference between affordable water rates for Oregonians and millions of dollars in unnecessary federally mandated projects. The city of Portland alone could face hundreds of millions of dollars in projected costs to unnecessarily bury perfectly good reservoirs and then build a superfluous water treatment plant. And actually, to add to David Schaff's cost estimates on the treatment plant, in 2002, this committee, the city's committee on Bull Run Treatment, did estimate the capital costs at $275 million. That would increase, at that time, they estimated that would increase Portland water rates by 76%. So you couple that with burying the reservoirs, and we're looking at a doubling of water rates. And I don't know how many of you are Portland water and sewer customers, but you probably know that among the largest 50 largest cities in the United States, Portland has the second highest combined water and sewer rates. So imagine running a food processing business in the city of Portland, a hotel, a commercial laundry. Imagine making ice, beverage ice. It's incredibly expensive. So we urge you to pass this bill and send a message that Oregon cares as much about keeping its water supplies clean and safe as it does about protecting ratepayers who have to pay the tab. Thank you.
Thank you. Why don't you go ahead, Brigham, and then we'll take any questions.
Good afternoon, Chair Dingfelder and members of the committee. Thank you for this opportunity to testify. My name is Regna Merritt. I'm the Executive Director of Oregon Wild, and I'm here to support 3469 on behalf of our 5,000 members. Oregon Wild is a statewide conservation organization dedicating to protecting Oregon's wildlands, wildlife, and waters as an enduring legacy. Our members and volunteers have a long-standing interest in the protection of Oregonians' clean drinking water supplies. Over our 32-year history, we've worked to protect forested watersheds that provide drinking water to the majority of Oregonians, including those in the Portland metro area, as well as Salem, Bend, Baker City, Westland, Lake Oswego, Oregon City, Albany, Eugene, Roseburg, Ashland, and Medford. Our staff has served on the Oregon DEQ's Drinking Water Protection Advisory Committee, the City of Portland's Water Quality Advisory Committee, and on the Citizen Panel on Bull Run Treatment. And while I'm going to talk a bit about Bull Run, I'd like to stress that under HB 3469, other Oregon communities like Bend and Baker City would benefit. As you probably know, Oregon is blessed with a unique natural heritage. It was in 1904 that President Theodore Roosevelt signed legislation to prevent human entry into the Bull Run Reserve, except for those necessary to protect the water supply. This was after the city was drinking from the Willamette River and became very concerned about drinking the waste that was coming from upstream. That heritage has served to protect our drinking water from commercial, residential, and industrial development, from sewage, viruses, bacteria, cryptosporidium, chemicals, and industrial pollutants that exist in most drinking water supplies in this country and throughout the world. Filtration and heavy treatment are necessary in these heavily polluted watersheds. But again, Bull Run's unique laws and heritage have protected us from these types of pollution, from many diseases, and from outbreaks of cryptosporidium. Crypto is a disease closely associated with exposure to human sewage and or the concentrated waste of cows. And that was why this rule was promulgated. Watershed protection is a proven and terrifically effective barrier to the transmission of waterborne disease. And I have to say that EPA's LT2 rule is an unfortunate and gross overreach. It mandates ridiculously expensive solutions to a problem that does not exist in Portland's drinking water supply. In fact, I spoke to the lead attorney for NRDC who filed the litigation to protect polluted drinking water around the country, and led to the promulgation of the LT2 rule, and he was appalled when he learned that the final rule, in fact, would force treatment for Portland's watershed and other protected watersheds around the state. For these and other reasons, we strongly support House Bill 3469, which would simply add standard language derived from the Safe Drinking Water Act to the statutes of Oregon and provide the state with the ability to grant a clean drinking water variance. Please support and pass HB 3469. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for the panel? Questions? Okay. Thank you very much for your testimony today. And the last two people we have signed up for this bill are Catherine Thomason from Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility and Floy Jones, Friends of the Reservoirs.
Thank you for the opportunity to testify to the this working group. My name is Catherine Thomason. I'm the president of the National Organization of Physicians for Social Responsibility and a past president of Oregon's chapter. Today I'm speaking on behalf of Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility, a 1,200-member organization in strong support of House Bill 3469. Our mission includes work to achieve a sustainable environment by reducing the threat of toxic degradation. We have testified on numerous legislative and regulatory proposals for maintenance of water quality through protection of forested watersheds and tighter limits on pollutants in drinking water. On behalf of Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility, I've actually served on some of these committees, including the Bull Run Treatment Panel for the City of Portland. Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility believes that maintaining a healthy, forested, and undeveloped watershed, including the strong restrictions on entry of human and domestic animals, markedly reduces the risk of viruses, bacteria, and protozoa, and is the best strategy for protection of superb water quality, which is the case in the Bull Run watershed. While the LT2 rule undoubtedly protects communities that have to drink polluted water, particularly those that have to pull their water from sources that have treated sewage flowing into them, in this case, it doesn't make any sense in the case of the Bull Run. It completely disregards the effectiveness of a pristine, closed water source in preventing disease outbreaks. And in fact, there have never been any outbreaks of disease, waterborne disease associated with Bull Run water of any kind. As stated before, this bill would simply add a standard language derived from the Safe Drinking Water Act to the Oregon Revised Statutes and provide the state with the ability to grant a second type of drinking water variance. Such a variance may be necessary to prevent mandatory treatment and the diversion of scarce resources away from conservation of Bull Run watershed, which ultimately may contribute to deterioration of its environmental integrity. As stated earlier, this variance would also benefit Oregon communities like Baker City and Bend that have taken very prudent steps to protect their watersheds as well. So for these reasons, I urge you to support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Floy Jones, and I'm here representing Friends of the Reservoirs. We're a citizens group that came together in 2002 to protect Portland's historic reservoirs and our Bull Run water system. And I'm here today to express our support for House Bill 3469. The Friends of the Reservoirs have long advocated for continued protections of our pure Bull Run source water and for protecting our valuable natural and historic resources. As you know by now, this House bill would amend our statutes such that Oregon variance laws regulations would be in line with the Safe Drinking Water Act. This change would provide options that encourage watershed protection. We believe that this bill will provide Oregon communities the opportunity to demonstrate that their clean, high-quality source water is not in need of a specific treatment technique. In the case of Bull Run, this will protect our natural environment and allow ratepayers to maximize the benefit of scarce public resources. And just to close, I just wanted to share that we are in agreement with the Trust for Public Land and American Water Works Association statement that by preserving the land that drains to its sources, the vast majority of contaminants are prevented from entering drinking water in the first place. As you know, Bull Run is one of the world's most highly protected source waters, and options available under federal law should be made available under Oregon law. And thank you again for holding this hearing, and we hope that you will pass this bill.
Thank you. Any questions for the representative person?
I would just volunteer a comment, actually, not a question, Madam Chair, if you just indulge me for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
There was only one of our colleagues here who raised his hand as a current ratepayer within the city of Portland, but I was a long-time, 25-year, the colleagues here, but I was a long-time resident of the city of Portland, and it always struck me that there was nothing that spoke quite as profoundly about the values and environmental quality of our community as its open-air reservoirs and the ability to preserve that, that those big pools of pristine water is a value that I think all those of us as Oregonians, even those who are former residents of the city, really value.
Thank you, Representative McPherson, for that comment. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you. Thank you for coming here today. We appreciate your input. Anybody else that would like to testify on House Bill 3469 today? Any other questions for the city or the department? Okay. Well, we appreciate you coming here today. And with that, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 3469. And we'll we have an informational session, and then it looks like you might end early, but we still have one more business. We have the Department of Environmental Quality that's going to give us an update on the rewriting of the water reuse rules for the state of Oregon. So with that, I'm going to open up an informational meeting and welcome Judy Jondal from the Department of Environmental Quality. And for the committee, this is an issue, actually, and Representative Jensen knows because this went through the Water Committee in the last session, but we had a lot of discussion about the existing water reuse statute for the state of Oregon and the need to look at those to make sure and remove any disincentives for use of water reuse projects in the state of Oregon. And so there's been a work group for a year, and now the rule rewriting work group has been going on for how many months, would you say, Judy?
Since last May.
Almost a year. And we actually have the chair of the work group who may wish to come up and sit at the dais also, or he wants to sit back there. Who happens to work for the city of Albany, so thank you for being here today. Okay, with that, Judy.
Okay.
Mark, are you sure you don't want to come up? Mark Yeager is of the city of Albany and is the chair of that committee. So, Judy, thanks for being here. Appreciate it, and appreciate the indulgence of the committee members, and we'll probably be a short presentation, and then we'll adjourn.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Judy Jondal. I work at DEQ in the Water Quality Program and the Water Reuse Program Coordinator. As you will note on the handout, after you have a few minutes to read it, we talk about water reuse, meaning the recycling of treated wastewater from both industrial and municipal facilities. I'm here today, though, to talk strictly about the use of recycled water from municipal facilities and provide you with information on DEQ's efforts to encourage the use of recycled water. A municipal facility is a wastewater treatment system that treats primarily water-carried human waste, better known in our world as sewage. Quite simply, the term recycled water, better known in our world as sewage. Quite simply, the term recycled water, which also is referred to as reclaimed water, means that effluent is discharged from a municipal wastewater treatment facility and is used for a specific beneficial purpose depending on the quality of the treatment, and it may only be used for non-drinking water purposes. Since this water is from a wastewater treatment facility, It is regulated under DEQ's water quality program and can only be provided for use under a water quality permit issued by the department. Being able to use recycled water is important for a number of reasons. As water quality permits are renewed, wastewater treatment facilities are facing more stringent permit limits on their discharges to waterways. Most of Oregon's rivers and streams are fully appropriated. As the population and economic development in Oregon continue to grow, the demand for water continues to increase. There is also a continued interest and demand for water conservation. More stringent federal regulations are creating increased costs for producing and distributing drinking water, and therefore the use of recycled water for non-potable purposes is becoming more feasible. Recycled water is used in many ways throughout the state. For example, approximately 12 golf courses around Oregon use recycled water for irrigation purposes. Approximately 54 facilities are irrigating pasture land, and two major facilities in the Willamette Valley are irrigating poplar tree plantations. The newly constructed OHSU South Waterfront building in Portland is using recycled water for toilet and urinal flushing. Oregon's recycled water program is regulated under rules that were adopted in August of 1990 by the Oregon Environmental Quality Commission. At that time, states throughout the country were pursuing water reuse programs as there are no federal regulations in place for water reuse. Most recently, Idaho revised their reuse rules. California is in the process of revising their regulations, and Washington is pursuing rule adoption for standards that have been in place for a number of years. Oregon's policy is to encourage the use of recycled water for beneficial purposes while assuring the protection of the health of Oregonians and the environment of the state. In the 2003 legislative session, Senate Bill 820 was adopted that required DEQ to work with interested parties to develop a report on opportunities and barriers associated with water reuse in urban areas. The report summarized a number of recommendations, which I will talk about in a few moments. DEQ established the Urban Water Reuse Task Force that met from May to November 2004, and the need for rulemaking was identified by the task force. Madam Chair was a member of that task force at the time. In 2004, DEQ finalized the agency's strategic directions, which identified the need to protect Oregon's water as a priority. One of the key actions under this priority is to encourage the broader reuse of wastewater. Another important policy was developed through a governor's executive order signed in March of 2005 stating water reuse as an integral component of economic development, water conservation, and environmental sustainability in Oregon. The Senate Bill 820 report developed by DEQ in December of 2004 states six recommendations that DEQ and other state agencies are now taking action on. The first recommendation states to develop a consistent state policy to promote water reuse. This recommendation is being implemented by DEQ, the Department of Human Services, the Department of Consumer and Business Services, the Department of Agriculture, and the Water Resources Department through the Governor's Executive Order. The second recommendation was to streamline regulations. We are in the process of updating rules to reflect changes in policy and changing technology that will encourage water reuse projects. The third recommendation was to develop permitting guidance. The guidance will address the permitting process for a water reuse project in which state agencies will be involved. It is DEQ's responsibility to issue the water quality permit for a project, but other state agencies may have some involvement depending on the end use of the water. The fourth recommendation was to prepare a manual of best management practices for recycled water projects so the regulated community will have tools to work with when developing a reuse project. A water reuse website has been developed by DEQ for program information and technical assistance purposes. The fifth recommendation is to improve interagency coordination among state regulatory agencies to coordinate efforts that will encourage water reuse. Through outreach, guidance, and the current rulemaking effort, the regulatory permitting process will be better understood by the affected state agencies and the regulated community. As I mentioned previously, this does involve a number of state agencies. The rulemaking began and was convened by the Water Reuse Task Force in May of last year with the goal of proposing rule recommendations that would further encourage the use of recycled water in Oregon. Various stakeholders are represented, including municipalities and state agencies, and the proposed rule revisions are needed to clarify program requirements and to update policies, including adding additional beneficial purposes for the use of recycled water and new wastewater treatment technologies. Public hearings on the proposed rules are scheduled for this summer, while presentation to the EQC is scheduled for final adoption next winter. DEQ continues to address the recommendations from the Senate Bill 820 report, which include development of guidance to provide a clear and consistent statewide approach to program implementation issues. Second is to continue outreach and education on water reuse through presentations at conferences and association meetings, and by further developing information on DEQ's website. The third is to continue the collaboration with state agencies under the governor's executive order and the rulemaking process to better understand the potential obstacles for facilities wanting to pursue and implement water reuse programs. I thank you for this opportunity to update you on our recycled water use efforts, and would be happy to answer any questions at this time.
Thank you, Judy. And I want to, Judy's been working on this for how many years? Almost two, well, year and a half.
Year and a half.
But I want to thank you for your hard work on this. I know it's been quite interesting, and you've been dealing with some very tough issues. I would like to ask Mark to come up, because Mark Yeager's of the City of Albany, he's been chairing those committees, and just want to thank him for his hard work. And maybe you could give us an update. It sounds like you're getting close to finalizing those draft rules.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Mark Yeager. I'm the Utility Services Manager for the City of Albany, and I'm serving as Chair of the Wastewater, the Reuse Rules Rewrite Committee. We have been working very hard. We've been working through some very difficult issues. There's not necessarily a consensus of opinion as to how we ought to go on certain issues. And we know through experience of projects that we've tried to implement throughout the state that there are roadblocks in the current rules that must be changed if we want to have reuse become a viable source of water for Wastewater, the Reuse Rules Rewrite Committee. We have been working very hard. We've been working through some very difficult issues. There's not necessarily a consensus of opinion as to how we ought to go on certain issues. And we know through experience of projects that we've tried to implement throughout the state that there are roadblocks in the current rules that must be changed if we want to have reuse become a viable source of water for our state. We are very close to being done. We still have a couple of issues that we have to work through related to wetlands and a couple other things, but Judy's working hard with the other state agencies to get input from them, and I think we're pretty close to having our final rule-making committee meeting, and then we have some other work we have to do relative to testimony for the public hearing process and soliciting input from other stakeholders who have not been at the table at this point, and then obviously working our way through the commission and the adoption of the rules. So it's gone very well, and I've appreciated the opportunity to serve as the chair.
Well, we appreciate your service. One question I had is there's been talk about possibly looking at a pilot project or a demonstration project once these rules are adopted or during adoption of the rules. Has there been any discussion about that in the work group?
Madam Chair, no. There has not been any specific discussion about a particular reuse project. There are a number of projects that are in the works, and there are a number of people who come to our committee meetings wanting to know when we're going to be done and making sure that the rules that we hopefully recommend to the EQC will facilitate those projects. But we have not talked about specific pilot projects that I'm aware of.
No.
Okay.
And can you just give an example for the committee so they have a sense of the type of projects and the magnitude of and the scope of the projects that, that people are coming to you waiting for these roads to be done, basically?
Well, let's see.
I know about the Greenberry Irrigation District. That one I'm pretty familiar with.
Okay. Well, Madam Chair, members of the committee, since you know about that one, maybe I'll bring that up. I'm not sure I'm at liberty to talk about them in a lot of detail because they aren't really, they're not the City of Albany's project in per se, but I know that the City of Corvallis is working with the Greenberry Water Irrigation District, which is a irrigation district that is south of the City of Corvallis, about 10 miles maybe, and they have a very strong interest in trying to supplement their water supplies in order to have more farms participate within their irrigation district. So I know they're working with the City of Corvallis and looking at options to try to move some of Corvallis's highly treated wastewater effluent down to the irrigation district for use on farms. And the irrigation district sees that as a benefit because they do have a lot of area within their irrigation boundaries that currently they don't have water rights. And so this becomes an opportunity for them to facilitate development of more productive farmland and things like that if they had water available to do that.
Questions for either of these folks? Sam Jensen? Okay. Well, we really appreciate you coming here today and giving an update and look forward to the final draft rules. I'm sure you're really looking forward to
the final draft. Judy particularly is looking forward to them. She thought this process was going to be a lot quicker than it has turned out to be.
But in my observation, it's been incredibly thorough and that you truly are trying to involve a broad range of stakeholders, and I'm sure you'll get some more input when you go out for the actual public comment. But from what I've observed, and I've actually been to some of the meetings, you've been doing a really excellent job, so thank you for your service, because this is above and beyond, I know, that what you do in your job with the City of Albany, so we should thank the City for letting you serve on that, and thank you, Judy, for your work and for the update, and if you could continue to keep us posted. Maybe in the future, this committee during the interim will be able to visit one of these projects. I think that would be very informative.
That would be great.
Right. With that, I will close the informational session on water reuse and close the House Energy and Environment Committee.